This is an iHeart podcast.
Whatever team Fia is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. Oh, it's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free, it's nicotine-free, it's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches because it really helps take that extra edge off. Get a jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
The stock market and hedge funds and the people's revolution, apparently, today. We'll talk about it. We're going to talk about something a bit more serious, a grave danger we're in. And we're going to round out the show with, well, some funny stuff you're really going to want to hang on for. All that's coming up right now on I'm Right. I give you my word, we're going to talk about the GameStop hedge fund thing. That it's all anybody can talk about today, and I understand it. It's really entertaining. I love it. I'm bringing it to you, I promise. But there's something a lot more important than that we have to talk about. And when I say more important, I mean life or death importance. You see, you and I are very, very blessed. We live in the United States of America. And I'm not doing one of these cliche America, the beautiful things. I'm not doing that right now. We live in an ultra prosperous country. We live in a safe country where we have, you know, friends to our north and our south and two gigantic oceans on the other side. Got a bunch of money. We've always had a big military to protect us. But set aside your American existence for a moment and think about all the other peoples in the world and the different countries in the world. Think about the ones who've had war all the time, who've had other countries invade them. Do you know what that's like? No, you don't. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I've been a part of some of those foreign, or one of those foreign engagements, but I've never had it on my soil. You've never woken up with a foreign army in your backyard coming in to get you and your family. You don't know what that's like. We don't know what that's like, so we don't have an appreciation for how truly safe we are. But I want you to understand something before I go into this story. It doesn't last forever. No empire in the history of mankind has lasted forever. At some point in time, it ends. And almost always, part of that ending is really, really, really ugly stuff. Being trampled underfoot of a bad country that hates your guts. We've never known danger like that. And even now, like we've been fighting this war on terror for what, 2-3 decades now? Okay, it's important. Glad we killed a bunch of terrorists. I obviously, as you well know, I want to bring our guys home. And yes, there have been terrorist attacks here, but they're not going to come take over America, right? They're just not. And they're not a military equal of ours. They'll get a few with some suicide bombs, and then we'll go wipe out 100 times that number. And they're not a threat to us militarily. One day, maybe in your lifetime, I hope not, one day, the United States military is going to have to square off against an equal or a near equal. And the stuff I'm about to show you, this stuff, that's when it'll matter. One day you wake up as that powerful empire who'd never been defeated and you lost, and now you lost everything and you wonder how it happened. I'm telling you right now, I had a private conversation. It's what sparked this whole thing. I had a private conversation with a close friend I have who's very close to the military. I'll put it that way. Very close last night. And he told me, Jesse, there is a frightening rot on the inside. I saw this article from the U.S. Naval Institute. And, well, here's what it is. Quote, destroyer CO, that's the captain of the ship, removed for making a plaque from a seized weapon. Allow me to give you just a brief little background on this. They'd gone on a mission. They got themselves an AK-47 to commemorate a victorious mission over the enemy. The captain had a plaque made of it. It's awesome. Warfighting stuff. Not in today's military. In today's military, that got him fired. The same guy I had a conversation with last night told me, hey, you know all those great admirals from World War II? And we did have the best admirals from World War II. Contrary to popular belief, they were not all nice and soft and cuddly. They were very rough, gruff, egotistical, cussed a lot maniacs. But they were great admirals, right? He said, you know all those admirals? They wouldn't make it past LT in today's Navy. This isn't about the Navy. This isn't about the Army. It's not about the Marines. It's not about the Air Force. I'm kidding. This is about the entire United States of America. And this is why I'm going to talk about all these things we're about to go through. You remember Obama? You remember what happened under Obama when we had that Navy ship? The Iranians had our Navy. Yeah, that's the one. The Iranians had our guys on their knees with their hands over their heads. And still people didn't wake up. You need to understand. Cultural Marxism, which is what we're having right now. That's why I talk about communism all the time. Cultural Marxism is carving through this society and destroying all of it. And a lot of it you can't see. And you won't be able to see it until it's way too late, unless we do something to stop it now. The United States military is talking about tackling climate change. They're talking about making things more hospitable so women can have longer hair and nail polish. You saw the transgender ban. It's become insane. This is all cultural Marxism. And right now, you know what it is? What's frustrating is you can't make people care yet. Well, we're fighting a couple guys in a cave in Afghanistan. What do I care? They can do whatever they want. You're not always going to be fighting some unsophisticated guy in a cave in Afghanistan. At some point in time, these people are needed to save the United States of America. That's true. And when that time comes, we have rotted out the officer corps and rotted out the enlisted corps to the point where there's no more fighting spirit left. There's no more, you know, cohesion left. It's just a big blob of miserable crap. And that's what we have now. We're getting there quickly, quickly. And it's not limited to the military. This social justice, racial justice, cultural Marxist garbage, everything's racist and sexist and all these other things. This is communism. You don't see it because they don't use the same words that Lenin and Stalin used, but it's called cultural Marxism, and it's infecting this entire society. Whenever you hear people talking like this, talking like Joe Biden talks, then you know that's what it is.
I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
Okay, he doesn't believe that. It doesn't matter. They've figured it out. The Russia, the Soviets figured it out a long time ago. Nobody is allowed to talk about this. They figured out a long time ago. Wait a minute. Americans are really sensitive to this racist thing. We can absolutely use that to worm our way through everything we want. And they did it. And they did it. You have pastors now preaching it from the pulpit. I left my own church about a year ago after St. George Floyd was killed. Pastor gets right up, starts talking about white privilege. I have white privilege. Peace. See ya. Never be back. It's everywhere now. It's everywhere. They can't bring themselves to stop doing it because it's so good, especially for the Democratic Party. It's so good for them. Every time they get you miserable and divided and fighting each other over stupid things like skin color, they gain more power every single time. They can't even criticize the domestic terrorist group, Black Lives Matter.
No one can tell me that if had been a group of Black Lives Matter protesting yesterday, they wouldn't have been treated very, very differently than the mob of thugs that stormed the Capitol. We all know that's true. And it is unacceptable, totally unacceptable.
Why do you think they do it? Why do you think they're constantly picking at the scab and picking at the scab and picking at the scab? And these old rich white people don't care about black people. Why do you think they do it? Because they know the more we're miserable and divided, the more we won't realize they're the ones that are screwing over the entire country. They never stop. And look, it would be one thing if this was just so they could win a congressional seat or even the presidential election. That's fine. But back to what I was talking about in the beginning. No, this infection doesn't stop until you stop it. It's in your FBI. It's in your military. And it's destroying us. And you're not going to know how bad it is until it's way, way too late. You remember what he talked about when he talked about George Floyd the other day?
Those 8 minutes and 46 seconds that took George Floyd's life opened the eyes of millions of Americans and millions of people around all over the world. It was the knee on the neck of justice, and it wouldn't be forgotten. It stirred the conscience and of tens of millions of Americans. And in my view, it marked a turning point in this country's attitude toward racial justice.
Racial justice. And you know what's so sad? What's so sad is so many people have been taught this for so long. I call them communists and they come back. I'm not a communist. They don't even know what they are. They don't realize it. They've just been told their entire lives, you're a victim or you're an oppressor. This is divided or America's racist. And they don't realize they've just become a tool to give the left more power. Why do you think Joe Biden's executive orders were this? Quote, promoted racial equality, ended travel ban on majority Muslim nations, banned discrimination based on gender identity, incorporated undocumented immigrants into the census, reversed the transgender military ban, reaffirmed commitment to tribal sovereignty, and denounced an anti-Asian discrimination and xenophobia. I mean, look, yeah, we dog on AOC all the time because she's an idiot, but she's an open socialist. That's why she talks like this.
Last term, the Republican caucus was one of extreme fealty to Donald Trump. There were some that were true believers, others that simply remained quiet out of cowardice, and out of fear of the president's retribution. But this term, there are legitimate white supremacist sympathizers that sit at the heart and at the core of the Republican caucus in the House of Representatives. And when you see someone like the House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy of the Republican Party, respond to white supremacist vitriol coming from his own members, not with censure like they did with Representative Steve King of Iowa, not with, you know, being stripped of committees, not with any consequence, you have to wonder who actually has that power. And it increasingly seems, unfortunately, that in the House Republican caucus, Kevin McCarthy answers to these QAnon members of Congress, not the other way around.
It's everywhere now. It's everywhere. If it stopped with that moron, I wouldn't be worried about it. Like I said, it's infected every cultural institution. They teach it to your kids in school. It's all over the movies, the Netflix, the everything you watch. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. FBI, military. It's in your church. If we don't stop this, if we don't stop this racial grievance misery that's spreading across the United States of America, we'll never stop communism, because that's the host for it. This cultural Marxism, this racist stuff is music to their ears. All of that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. Home title theft is not one of those things that just happens to other people. This is so bad right now in America, and I'll be honest with you, law enforcement does not have a handle on it. They'll tell you that. The FBI, they're gravely concerned about it. Cybercrime's up 75% since all this lockdown stuff happened. The whole economy, major parts of it have shifted to online, and these cyber thieves, they're in heaven. And they spend every waking minute trying to get home titles. It's a lucrative business. And yours is online. Mine's online. They're all online now. It takes these guys less than 10 minutes to hack into it and get it. It's not difficult for them. I can't stress that enough. And you don't have any way to stop them without Home Title Lock. There is not another way. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. Register your address. You might already be a victim. While you're there, sign up. If you use the promo code RADIO, you get 30 days for free. HomeTitleLock.com. I understand this whole Wall Street GameStop thing is confusing to people. I'm not some Wall Street expert and won't pretend to be, as far as all the stocks, bonds, and shorting and longing and things like that. I understand the basics, but allow me to break it down for you. For you know, this is for the dumb people like me. I'm sure many of you are far, far advanced past where I am. There is a thing called shorting a stock. Hedge funds love doing this. And you can do it to the point where you're really manipulating the stock price on things. They're moving stock numbers. Hedge funds are that powerful. And okay, that's fine. Well, there's an online place called Reddit. I'm not going to get into it. And there are guys there who didn't like how hedge funds were shorting GameStop. GameStop's just a place where you buy hard copies of video games. But obviously, it's, you know, got a short shelf life because everything's bought digitally now. Well, these guys decided they were going to start punishing them for shorting the GameStop stock, and they decided to start buying up a bunch of stuff and driving the GameStop stock through the roof, thus making these hedge funds lose a gargantuan amount of money. And this has created the funniest 24 to 48 hours online I've seen in a long time. You have these millionaire, billionaire hedge fund guys getting absolutely slaughtered by some dude sitting in their mom's basement eating potato chips, buying GameStop stock. It is the funniest thing in the world, but it has been very revealing. There are, you know, there are all these trading apps you can buy. Take 5 seconds, you can download one on your phone and start buying stocks in something. It's really cool. It gives you and I power to dabble in that if we want to dabble in it. Well, one of these apps is called Robinhood, and it's, you know, billed as, we're the app for the common man. Well, all these apps, especially Robinhood, they banned their users from buying any more GameStop stock. Just out of the blue. Oh, yeah, thanks for using the app. No, you're not allowed to buy this anymore. I don't even know how that's illegal. Quote, in light of the current market volatility, we're restricting transactions of certain securities in position closing only, including AMC, that's the AMC theaters, they're part of this whole thing, and GME, that's GameStop. Read more here. Well, we finally have an issue that's uniting everybody. I mean, everybody. AOC, of all people. Quote, gotta admit, it's really something to see Wall Streeters with a long history of treating our economy as a casino complain about a message board of posters also treating the market as a casino. Then Don Jr., quote, took less than a day for big tech, big government, and corporate media to spring into action and begin colluding to protect their hedge fund buddies on Wall Street. This is what a rigged system looks like, folks. And if you're asking what all this means to you, well, actually, it does mean something big. In the short term, it's something for you to laugh about. We're going to play you some hilarious memes about it at the end of the show. But in the long term, this is extremely beneficial. You see, if we're going to save this place, it's going to require a lot of Americans who aren't yet awake to wake up and realize just how broken the system is. They don't know it yet. You know it. I know it. Most people don't. We need them to know it. This joining of the shields response by Wall Street to try to block the common man from doing what Wall Street does routinely is an outstanding wake-up moment for the United States of America. If you weren't otherwise informed, now you know, oh, wow, these guys are really, really bad people, and they don't have my interest at heart. They have their interest at heart, and they'll slaughter you without a second thought in order to benefit themselves. And the more people who realize that, the closer we are to actually taking this place back. What's happening today is a good thing. Every part of it is a good thing. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. All right. We've got a couple good guests coming up. Hang on. John Kerry, I'm so glad he's back. I've sure missed getting talked down to. Nobody can do it like John Kerry, and who can forget? Well, I mean, look, he has a message. If you have one of those gross energy jobs, well, here you go.
There certainly are oil and gas industry workers who are watching you both right now, who will hear the message that the takeaway to them is that they are seeing an end to their livelihoods. What do you say to them?
What President Biden wants to do is make sure those folks have better choices, that they have alternatives, that they can be the people who go to work to make the solar panels.
Better choices. Go make some solar panels. Joining me now to talk about that and many other things, I'm sure, representative from Pennsylvania, Mike Kelly, one of our favorites on this show. Congressman, why don't they just stop whining about their jobs and go make some solar panels?
Well, you know, I think that President Biden is just picking up on the agenda that of course, that President Obama had. There's not much difference there, including bringing back Secretary Kerry to weigh in on it, you know, trying to push through the Paris Climate Accord without ever getting it ratified, by the way, which is an essential part of what it is that we should be doing. You know, you have to look at what's happening, Jesse, and anybody that's questioning what's happening today apparently wasn't paying attention to the very few times that candidate Biden said when he was running for an office, he's actually keeping all the promises that he said he was going to do and even taken to a different degree. Listen, the loss of these energy jobs, where I'm from in Western Pennsylvania, this is an incredible loss of jobs that we have, plus the advantage of making ourselves energy independent and the biggest exporter of energy in the world, sticking with our old standards. And so when you look at what's happening now, you start to wonder, what is it that we're doing that's better for America? President Biden said that he wanted to build back America better. Well, you don't build back by tearing down where we were already in, and we were in an unusual situation we had never been in before, at least not in my lifetime, where we were energy independent and the biggest exporter of energy in the world, which put us in a position we didn't have to rely on any bad actors to supply us with anything we needed for our energy needs. Instead, we were able to run the table on that and take that advantage away. Jobs and more jobs, canceling the Keystone Pipeline, thousands and thousands of jobs, and the safest way to transport or to move this product is through the pipelines. That's the safest and best way to do it. So we're eliminating all that. Pushback from Canada. Canada will have no problem moving that product out in a different direction. If the United States doesn't want to take it, shame on it. We lose an awful lot of what we had that was working our way. Thousands and thousands of jobs and put us in a very enviable position globally. That's the direction this administration is taking, though, and there couldn't be a worse person handling that than John Kerry. My God, I've never seen anybody that looks so tired and worn out as he did in his press appearance. He really looked like somebody that was resurrected, not somebody that was going to move in the right direction. Certainly, if we're talking about energy, you should have somebody that looks like they have energy, not somebody who looks like they're ready for some other position. Mm-hmm. Look, we got a great challenge in front of us, you know, and you look at it. So reviving the Obama initiative, putting John Kerry back in the position he's in, and I'm not making fun of the man, but he does look exhausted. You talk about a lack of energy. That's not somebody that I would want in that position, but that's what we're facing. And the American people need to understand, look, we're going to fight back as much as we can, but being in the minority now in the party, not having any part of it, where we can actually look at things and say, we can stop this. We can definitely make a difference. It's going to be very difficult for us. This is just the first step in a long list of things that's going to take place. I'm really worried about the fact that we're looking at the census now. You know, we're going to start counting non-U.S. citizens in our census. And when we do that, so that's going to affect the distribution across our nation of how things fall when it comes to where we have representation. Why would you include a non-resident, a non-citizen, a resident certainly, but a non-citizen resident of the United States in the census? That's another move that the left has taken, and they'll be able to run the table on a lot of policy because they'll be in a position of numbers, and I'm talking about where the representation comes from because of numbers. So we're in a very serious situation right now.
Will you explain, please, how that works to people? Because a lot of people get confused about why they should even care. Why would you count illegals? Why does the left want to count illegals? They don't understand how it works. They don't understand exactly why. Please explain exactly why.
Yeah, I think I'll boil it down. In my family, my wife and I have 4 children. And we have 10 grandchildren. That's what we look at as our immediate family right now. We don't count other people who come in to visit. Into our house to visit, or who move into the neighborhood as being part of our family. When you start expanding and looking at how you're going to apportion different seats throughout the government, where are we going to have the direction of where we're spending money? It's all based on what the census produces. Why would you consider a non-U.S. citizen as a permanent resident and say, oh, no, these people deserve and need and will get the same type of attention that a U.S. citizen would? That doesn't make sense. You just don't do things like that and hope to keep the country as safe as it needs to be. So when we talk about that, I try to explain it just as I look at my family, I think as you look at your family, and I would ask people who view this, start thinking about this. You're going to be responsible for not just your family, right? But those that live around us, those that live near us, and people who we don't even know. We're starting to take in this entire horde of people, and we're giving them the same treatment as we give U.S. citizens. That does not make sense to me when we know who pays the ticket on all this are the United States citizens. I think it's kind of sad that we look at this and say, well, we want to be welcoming to people. I do too. But I want to make sure that when we're looking at it and how we're going to dole out what it is that we dole out in tax dollars, that we're actually doling it out to places where we are supporting rights and programs for U.S. citizens, and not just people who happen to be here at the time that we start to establish the number of seats that each state has, congressional seats, the representation gets greatly changed when you look at how we draw those people in, then to apportion the number of seats in our Congress. The House of Representatives are all based on population, and we see some states are losing population, other states gaining population, and Pennsylvania will lose one seat after the new census is taken because we have fewer people. Just understand, everything is based on your population. How many people are there? What is it that we have to fund? And how do we base that funding and the representation? It's on population.
Congressman, I talked at the opening of my show about the United States military and how I'm trying to warn people how infected it's become with this social justice warrior garbage. They're tackling climate change. They're worried about going after white supremacy, and we have to make sure every woman can ever have her fingernails as long as possible. And we're worried about everything except making the military as deadly as humanly possible. We have a CEO who's been removed off a destroyer for making a plaque off a weapon he and his men captured. This kind of insanity is rotting out our guys, and our guys deserve better.
Yeah, and what I understand, when I talk to people who are military people, yourself included, and thank you for your service, I'm hearing from so many of our veterans and so many of our active duty military that there's too much of a liberal agenda now that's infecting our armed services. And these people have, they put the time in, they're rising to the top where they're actually going to be changing policy, affecting policy, and they will be in commanding positions, but that's not the way we used to be. This is going to be, again, this far left agenda has infected not only just our general population, but in our military, where we have to have a stronger commitment to who we are as the United States of America. What made us great of course, beginning with everything is the fact we had a strong military that was able to protect us. Now you're looking at policies and you say, what does this have to do with defending our shores? What does this have to do with defending our country? What does this have to do with saving America? And you said, this is a social agenda. It's not a military agenda. And you start to sit back and say, my goodness, when did this happen? And the answer is when you weren't looking.
When did it happen? Because it seems like it happened so fast. I guess that's what I'm trying to understand. It wasn't like this even when I was a kid, and I'm getting older. I'm not that old. When did it happen?
I think that change takes place during a crisis or a tragedy. I believe there's a belief that somehow, oh, well, America will always be great. America will always be able to keep her place in the world just because we're America. And I tell people, no, you have a greater obligation to really watch what's going on. And are we changing? And all the things that have been put in place over the last 10, 20, 30 years, it hasn't happened in a way where there's a big change, but it's that little nibbling away at who it is that we are and us not seeing it. Because our eyes were deflected someplace else. We were looking at other things that we thought were important. I'll just say this, and I'm repeating it. A crisis or a tragedy is what brings about change. And I think what will happen in the United States, and I hope as people are looking now and paying more attention, and certainly they are after this election, of what's going on, the transformation of who it is that we believe we are, at least some of us believe we are, all of a sudden we're looking back and what you just asked, when did this happen? And the answer is, it's been so good for so long that the idea that, well, that's just the way it will always be. And I always tell people, listen, you're one heartbeat away from not being here. I think foolishly sometimes we think we don't have to invest anything in our future. It'll be solid. We really have to take a look. And Jess, I'm just going to suggest right now, my number one concern is how are we educating our people? I don't think there's anything right now more important than for all of us to take a look at our public schools and say, would you please look at who's on your school board and try to understand these are the same people that not only don't worry about your taxes, you should be worrying more about your textbooks. Don't worry about where the bus stops or who the basketball or football coach is. Wonder about the curriculum and start to look at what is it that your children are bringing home. We get them up in the morning, we feed them, we make sure they're dressed properly, we get them off to school, and then for 8 hours, somebody else has their head. They come home at night. So many parents are working two jobs now that make sure everything's fine for their kids. We don't have those conversations that we used to have. You know who I sat down with every night? My mom and dad. They had been through the Great Depression. They had been through World War II. My dad participated in. We watched what happened with the Korean War, and we watched what happened. But you know what? That's not who's having conversations with our children now. When our nuclear family gets destroyed, when we don't have husbands and wives becoming mothers and fathers joining in, the greatest occupation you can have is as a parent. And you have to educate and bring your children along and teach them. Teach them. They need to know. They need to understand the price that's been paid for them to be where they are. Public education, America was the first country to start it. The rest of the world looked and said, why is America so great? Because they were able to educate people. In Pennsylvania, the Public School Act of 1849, we made sure that people were going to be entering in to a life and into a workforce and actually know what their responsibilities are. I think too many of us grow up thinking, hey, that's not up to me. Somebody else needs to take care of this. You know what? It starts at home, but it is. Watch your schools, folks. Please go to your school board meetings. Please see who's on your school boards. Check out the textbooks. What is inside those textbooks? Who wrote them and why did they write them that way? And please look at the curriculum that's being offered right now. When we're not talking about the right things for the right reasons, then bad things happen. And that's what's happened too often across our country. We need to take back our schools, and then we need to watch our children again flourish because they understand the greatness of America and the 1.5 million men and women in uniform that gave their lives, and the millions and millions of Americans who have served to preserve that right that we have because of those who were before us and fought and died for us.
Congressman, much appreciated.
Thank you, Jess, and thanks for everything you're doing. It is absolutely crucial.
Appreciate you. We'll be back. One of the things I talk about all the time when I talk about the system is how the system never holds itself accountable. And it's actually worse than that. The biggest failures get promoted.
They brag about themselves. They sell books. They win awards. That's how broken the whole thing is. And nobody is a better example of this than Andrew Cuomo. Nobody. Whatever your feelings on coronavirus, love it, hate it, scared to death, don't care at all, Andrew Cuomo, as governor of New York, by any measure, has been a complete disaster during this entire thing. A disaster. He's killing old people, and he's winning Emmys for it. And he's on every single news channel talking as if he's the country's leader for the thing. And now, when he finally gets asked about his horrible failures, this is what you get.
We're at war. Would you delegate it to 50 states? But their criticism was, well, people in nursing homes died. Yes, people in nursing homes died, and they attacked me and all the other Democratic governors with that. We've done a full study of it. The virus came into nursing homes from the staff. People in nursing homes died, and they're playing politics with the issue, which I think is especially cruel, because people who lost loved ones in a nursing home, they're dealing with it, and now they also have to deal with the confusion or the pain of maybe government did this.
Well, we certainly wouldn't want to politicize something like coronavirus. Joining me now to talk about that and many other things, the managing editor of Media Research Center and sadly a Penn State fan, Curtis Howe. Curtis, we don't want to politicize coronavirus.
No, no, we don't, Jesse. No, we wouldn't want to do that to the love gov, you know, who's single and ready to single and ready to mingle, Jesse. So, yes. And a guy, we don't want to offend a guy who CNN and MSNBC love to death. The one whose brother hosts CNN's 9 p.m. show, Cuomo Primetime, Fredo Cuomo. The guy who threatened to throw someone down a set of stairs and held up a giant Q-tip in the middle of the pandemic when New York was on lockdown with people dying left and right in the Big Apple. No, I mean, really, this is just pathetic. You know, we found out today, thanks to the New York Times, which the Daily Caller reported months ago, that, yeah, he was undercounting the number of deaths in New York City nursing homes. We'll be interested to see what the media coverage looks like over the next couple of days, because, of course, that would mean, again, as we go back to our first point, offending the love gov. And we can't really have that. Someone who wrote the book, a book, supposedly best-selling book on pandemic leadership. But this is our news media nowadays, because if you don't want to offend your friends, because I guess when COVID is over with, depending on your definition, COVID already may be over, you wouldn't get invited to parties, and you don't like that.
Well, now he's going to forever be known as the love gov on this show. Curtis, I must ask, I have to ask your take on this, in my opinion, hilarious GameStop versus hedge fund managers thing. And let me just be clear once again for everybody. I'm not anti-Wall Street. I'm not anti-billionaire or millionaire. But I love everybody playing by the same rules. That's what I love. And when you enjoy manipulating things, I like it when you get your comeuppance sometimes. What's Curtis's take?
Yeah, this is another example of corporate establishment media and their friends on Wall Street really kind of coming together to wag their finger in the direction of the little guy here. CNBC has just been on the verge of a meltdown. It really mirrors what the liberal media went through after the 2016 election when Donald Trump won, where, you know, the first couple of days really seemed to be like awake. They're sitting shiva after a funeral after someone died. But now with CNBC, they're melting down here. Today we had some billionaire who went on and complained about people making money while getting stimulus checks in their pajamas. This is really where we are right now, where the elites are scared that they're continuing to lose control. They have the White House, they have Congress, and yet they're unhappy. They're unhappy about this. That's their latest thing that they're unhappy about. Censorship has been another huge thing, and obviously this kind of tails into censorship with what Robinhood's been doing by preventing people from trading for companies like GameStop and AMC, Discord shutting down the thread, the group, you know, really trying to scheme all of this together. It's just really another example of the elites really kind of colluding together where, yeah, they don't like when the little guy does well. And again, they're upset. And I think the biggest takeaway in all of this, moral of the story, Jesse, is progressives are always unhappy.
Curtis, I have to ask, politically, purely politically, How does the Biden administration handle this? And I ask it like this. I've never seen an issue. Maybe 9/11 for about 30 seconds is the last time I remember anything uniting virtually everybody in this country. And I mean, we've got open socialists uniting with people as far right as I am, and that they think this is kind of good and kind of hilarious. So when you're president of the United States, or whether you're Nancy Pelosi or somebody, how do you go against that tidal wave? I mean, you are the 1%, as in you're the only 1% that's on the side of the hedge fund.
Right. Joe Biden has not had a very good 24 to 48 hours, really, or just his first week in office, as we've seen with the executive orders hurting energy workers, the people that he claims to stand up for. He's still lunch bucket Joe at heart, when actually Wall Street sided with the Biden campaign. Wall Street gave millions to the Biden campaign because they wanted to see their guy in office, and they love that Janet Yellen is the Treasury Secretary. So far, it really seems like they're going to side with Wall Street. Today's White House press briefing, a reporter, I believe was with Reuters, asked Jen Psaki, should Janet Yellen recuse herself from all of this, considering she gave a paid speech to one of the hedge funds that's at the center of this whole hubbub? And Psaki really basically said, no, not really, because Janet Yellen's one of the world's most renowned experts on markets. So, yeah, it looks like they really are going to try and do this, Jesse, where they're going to really try and stick it to the little guy here, because we can't have this volatility. And, you know, people like us and people on the far left don't know what's good for them. So that's really what they're doing here. It's just kind of buzzwords you can throw around, neoliberal, corporate liberals. They're all really coming together here, and they're really not seeing the writing on the wall that you're correct, that people from Ted Cruz to AOC are united behind the fact that, yeah, this doesn't look right. This is really ridiculous. The arrogance here is astounding and through the roof. Yeah, I mean, this country is looking for something to be united around, and it looks like GameStop has done that. Pretty incredible.
It's pretty incredible. All right, Curtis, there's something I struggle with anymore, because I'm a tiny government guy. I mean, very, very tiny. I think D.C. should be razed to the ground, and the Capitol should be moved to the middle of a cornfield in Iowa. That's how small I am of government. I don't like it. They're going to censor people. They're already censoring people. We have word today about possible COVID mandates, but not for everyone, just for air travel. I'm worried about a D.C. corporation cooperation to censor people and to crush people, where they don't have to pass laws. They just ask all their corporate buddies to censor you and I out of society. And I'm not sure what I'm supposed to think about that. I wake up in the morning and I'm a tiny government libertarian type. And by the time I go to bed, I want the National Guard to storm in somebody's headquarters. What am I supposed to do with all this?
It is really difficult. Big tech has really made that, you know, really difficult. You look at the rise of Microsoft and Twitter and Facebook, you're like, free market, yes, this is amazing. You know, the new public square where people can come together, you can stay in touch with that friend that you sat at the same lunch table with at middle school that you didn't think you know you still needed in your life. But now we're at this point where they're censoring people left and right. You know, I was one of the people, many people here with over at the First, your colleague Dana Lash was banned. A number of us were for sharing the New York Post story about Hunter Biden. Really, here at the Media Research Center, our boss Brent Brazell and his team, the Free Speech Alliance, they want them broken up. You know, they make clear that they're big free market people, but they've reached a point where These corporations, Silicon Valley has gotten so big, you think the heads of these companies and a number of the executives, especially those along lines of enforcement, are arguably more powerful than a number of governments put together, really. It's really hard to rival the power that they have over our, you know, lives, you know, how we feel, our emotions, our state of mind, our mental being, if we're censored and shut out and not able to communicate with the outside world. So you really got to think back through your history to something like Standard Oil, where, you know, or the progressive era, where unfortunately they went crazy. Woodrow Wilson, you know, people say Donald Trump's the worst president. You would say Woodrow Wilson, you know, that he's an actual bad guy. But that kind of same thing, you know, are they too big? Did Standard Oil have too much in the market? You know, we got to really start thinking about this here. And I'll admit, I'm with you. It's very, very difficult to find ourselves in this situation. But you're kind of tilting that way with Silicon Valley being, again, an exception, not the rule. I think that's the important takeaway here.
Curtis Houck, appreciate you, my man.
Anytime, Jesse.
All right, we got more. Hang on. The internet's a great thing. I know it's been used and will be used for a million bad things, but man, was it a revelation for me discovering just how many clever people there are out there, especially when there's a big news story that hits, like this Wall Street thing today with the online guys versus the gigantic hedge fund managers. And now it's been an absolute meme paradise today. And I thought, as kind of an offbeat way to end the show, we would play you, or at least show you, a couple of the very, very good ones and then a short little video. Here's the first. Here's the first one I found. Obviously, that's in reference to Robin Hood, which was supposed to be for the people, blasting the people. And so Robin Hood's taking it on the chin today. The hedge fund guys who are used to manipulating the markets are taking it on the chin today. This is Fear the Floofs. That's probably my favorite one. And this is, well, I'll just let you look at this one. I got a kick out of that. And finally, somebody, you remember that video? All right. It's immature. It makes me laugh. I'll see you tomorrow.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these failure drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get you 10% off.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.